Please be seated. Most often, the sermons that I give, anyway, focus on the text itself and the meaning of verses in the text. Usually I'll take a story and say, okay, what does the story unpack it? What is it telling us? What do we need to know from this particular text? Today I'd like to do something a little different, and I'll try not to make it seem like an English class, but I'm going to ask us to kind of take a stratospheric look at our lesson today instead of the close reading that we usually do. Every work of literature that tells a story has a structure. That sounds like an English teacher, right? Well, nonetheless, it's true. Every work of literature that tells a story has a structure, including the story of Jesus and his disciples. This structure of Jesus and his disciples helps us to shape the meaning of the story. For example, take the Gospel of John. The structure of the Gospel of John is that of the wisdom teacher, or the master, or the rabbi, one who passes on the truths to the next generation. Thus, the structure of the Gospel of John is mostly a series of theological truths to be memorized and faithfully absorbed and then handed on. Imagine, if you will, a string of pearls. Each pearl would be a theological truth, and each pearl would be distinct from the pearl preceding it and the pearl after it. And each pearl is a truth that stands by itself and gets handed on as something quite precious. So imagine a string of pearls, and each pearl has this statement such as, I am the bread of life, pearl one, or I am the bread of life, I am the wine, pearl two and three. And we can go right around the string of pearls, and we would have these distinct theological statements or beliefs that are teachable. Now, the one thing about the pearls that's really important is when you put one woman puts on a string of pearls, she expects the pearls just to stay there. They don't go bouncing around, and they don't kind of moving around. They stay in place. Well, and that's kind of like the structure of John. The structure of John is really very static. There's not much movement. There's just one aphorism or one short story that tells a truth about Jesus or about the world after another. Structure of Mark, however, is quite different. Mark structures his gospel not as a series of truths to be learned, but as a journey to be taken. Let me repeat that. Mark structures his gospel not as a series of truths to be learned, but as a journey to be taken. For example, think of Canterbury Tales, which is structured by a journey filled with stories. Unlike John and more like Canterbury Tales, Mark is the story of a journey. It is action-oriented. Movement is critical for Mark. The idea of the static teacher just does, as in John, just does not appear in Mark. For example, the Greek word euthus means immediately or straight away. It is the single most used word in the entire Gospel of Mark. Let me give you an example from chapter 1 alone. This is just from the first chapter. And the word we're talking about is, the Greek word is euthus, and the English translation of euthus is immediately or straight away. Mark. And the Spirit immediately drove him out into the wilderness. Immediately he called them, and immediately they left their nets and followed him. Immediately the leprosy left him, and he was made clean. And straightway he called them, and they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. And he straightway charged him, and he immediately sent him away. Eight times. Somebody, who counted? Who's the mathematician here? Oh, okay, great. Eight times, and in the gospel itself, euthus appears, or immediately or straight away, appears 42 times. This is no string of pearls, my friends. This is a race, and they're constantly moving. There is nothing static about the structure. So this structure, when we see this, we already get a hint of what the gospel message is going to be. It's going to be about Jesus and his followers on a journey. Along the journey, the disciples learn who Jesus is and what they, his followers, are to be and to do. It is a journey that reveals the identity of its main figure, Jesus, but more than that, the character, that is, the type of person Jesus is revealed through this journey. And simultaneously, the character of the disciples is also revealed. In truth, we have a number of journeys. There's the overarching journey that starts in the beginning of the gospel, starts in Nazareth, and the journey continues all the way until Jerusalem. So from Nazareth to Jerusalem is this journey. And in between, there are a lot of sub-journeys that Jesus is taking. Like last week, he went up north to Gentile villages. The week before, he went to another group of Gentile villages. He often goes into Galilee, and he goes into the area of the Samaritans. So these are all minor journeys within the larger journey. And what, of course, is the essence of a journey? It's to get there. The essence of a journey is a goal. If we don't have a goal, we don't have a journey. The journey is getting ourselves to the goal. Think of the adventure stories in literature and movies. There's a pattern or structure there too. The pattern we find in stories all around the world and in all times and places is that of a hero who is called to face a great and terrible force that threatens to destroy the hero and all that he or she loves. Thus, the hero is called to go onto a frightening adventure that he or she is not sure can be won. Through this adventure and facing great odds, eventually the hero overcomes the threats and saves the people. Think of movies like Jaws, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Doctor Who, even old, for those youngsters in here, old chestnuts like The Lone Ranger. How many saw The Lone Ranger? Okay. What? In Germany? In Germany?
Well, it's not the end of the world.
You're cheeky. But this journey is more than a journey. It's also an adventure, an adventure of self-discovery. The disciples discover who they are in the course of the adventure they are on. The disciples' journey is not only one of learning about Jesus, they learn about themselves as well. It is through this adventure that the disciples are tested, and as they are tested, their character is revealed. And that's not so good for the disciples, because Mark, for some reason, just doesn't seem to like these disciples. He doesn't think highly of them. He clearly doesn't respect them. At every opportunity for Mark, the disciples fail as disciples. Even to the final hours of Jesus' life, they can't do something as simple as staying awake while Jesus is praying for his life. They lack imagination. They lack trust in Jesus. But most of all, they lack courage. In short, they are remarkably like us. Why does Mark have it in for the disciples? If you look at the other Gospels, Matthew, Luke, and John, the disciples get beat up there too for good reason. But with Mark, there seems to be a kind of animus that just the others don't share. Why is that? Now, for thousands of years, scholars have debated this back and forth, and now, because you're here, you're going to know the real truth behind it. I think what's going on for Mark is that by the time Mark is writing his gospel, it's maybe 60 AD, so maybe 30 years after Jesus, by this time already legends and stories are springing up all around the Mediterranean, up into Rome, about the disciples and Jesus, and Jesus is so far removed now, they need a kind of intermediary, and the disciples function as kind of, not quite demigods, but almost. The disciples, there are stories about the disciples who, they fly across the water. They fly up to mountains. They can cure and heal whole villages at a time. They have this extraordinary power. They really almost rival the power of Jesus himself. And these stories are becoming very important. And the negative side of this is what? I mean, I think you know, Sue already started to say it. The negative side of this is that if that's what it is to be a disciple, I've got no chance. I can't fly. I can't heal entire masses of people. All the stories, these legends, I can't do any of that. I'm just me. That, I think, is Mark's point. Mark wants to drive home the fact that it's not all of these things the disciples did that makes them important. It's the fact that they were called and they followed Jesus. And so the message of Mark is that you are called as you are. And you know what? The disciples aren't any better than you. And just read my book and you'll see how crazy the disciples are, what failures the disciples are. Read my book, find out that you, in fact, are even better than the disciples. And that gives a kind of, opens possibilities up for believers they never had before. Mark is trying to show his readers that to go on this journey with Jesus does not require us to be heroes, but just to be ourselves following Jesus in faith. Faith in Jesus Christ is not for Luke Skywalker or the Lone Ranger or Doctor Who even. Again, faith in Jesus is for ordinary people who learn and grow on this journey of faith that Jesus calls us to join. But wait, there's more. This journey of adventure is not only a journey, but a relationship. When Jesus calls us to journey with him in faith, he is calling us to be with him, to be with Jesus in this great adventure of life. Now, when we call this journey a relationship with Christ, we're also saying what following Jesus is not. Following Jesus on this journey is not following a set of laws and rules. Following Jesus on this journey is not following a set of beliefs or dogmas. Following Jesus on this journey is not following a set of intellectual propositions you have to affirm. When you are on this journey, you are following not dogma or laws, but a person, Jesus Christ. It is Jesus who is leading you on this adventure. And as you follow Jesus on this adventure, your character will be tested and revealed, just as Jesus' disciples' characters were tested and revealed. They who left Jesus alone to face the terrors and brutality of Roman execution. Nevertheless, even for Mark, these failed disciples are still disciples. They and we are forgiven and accepted and offered a place on the journey into the life of God. Because the heart of this journey is not how far you get or how fast you go or how heroic you are. The heart of this journey is relationship. It's like a marriage. When I used to marry couples routinely, as a pastor, I would try and arrange for them to have premarital counseling. And after a while, I just gave up on it. Because what happened was the couple would come in and they're so gaga over each other, they can't think straight. They can't hear what you're trying to arrange. And they have no idea what's in store for them. I mean, those of you who have ever been married, did you know the day you got married what you'd be in for? No, you had some general ideas, but did it really happen? So many other things happened that you could never have imagined happening, and yet they happened to you in your life. Where will that journey take you? How will each of you change in following Jesus? The main thing is that even though we cannot know what is coming in this life or how we're going to change or what physical and emotional challenges may come upon us, we nevertheless commit ourselves to journey together, no matter where that journey will lead us. We give ourselves to each other unreservedly, together with Christ, as long as we both shall live. Amen.